This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It is the final hour of power here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped into the youngest in charge, Danelle Willingham. I'll take you up to 11 o'clock. Right now, we go out to the Rude Guest Hotline for the second time this show, where we find our pal Justin Mello, one of the draft analysts for the Draft Network. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app and check out thedraftnetwork.com, some of the absolute best coverage of the NFL draft that you'll get. It is at @JustinM_NFL. Justin, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate you guys having me on. We're here at the final stretch of the NFL draft. Excited to be here.
Yes, indeed, man. And you're starting to see teams get those top 30 visits scheduled, and you're starting to see, you know, get some answers, rather, on where the quarterbacks are going to go. I know Jalen Milroe is the signal caller that's garnered a lot of attention this week and over the weekend, him being invited to the green room at the NFL draft, inkling and a hint that maybe, just maybe, he goes in round one. We'll touch on the quarterbacks here in a second, Justin. I want to get to the Commanders here. And we were reading a piece online that it was done by Jeff Legoworld of ESPN, and he mocked Shamar Stewart to the Washington Commanders at pick number 29 overall. If Washington drafts Shamar Stewart, Justin, I will vomit because of in this deep – just bear with me here. In this deep edge rusher class, how do you end up with the guy that has the worst production?
Well, I you know, it's interesting you say that because I don't think he's going to be there at 29. I mean, this is a guy –
I pray to the Lord he's not.
The NFL is incredibly high on this guy.
Yes.
You know, I mean – and look – I said this on a work meeting earlier today. The NFL knows things, okay?
Yeah.
We started hearing about this guy in, like, December, January, right? And we all kind of – everyone raised their eyebrows, right? Well, the production hasn't been there. The NFL knows, okay? He goes to the combine. That was one of the best performances we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Certainly one of the better ones in recent memory. I think this guy's going top 10. I mean, the production – you know, you find people on two sides of the fence. Sometimes the pass rush win rate wasn't as high as it maybe you'd like it to be when there wasn't tangible production, but there was also a lot of quarterback pressures as well. So this is very much a bet on the upside, bet on the measurements, bet on the length, you know, sort of deal. You think he's going to get better. In Washington, again, you know, defensive-minded head coach and Dan Quinn, I would like that landing spot for him, but I don't think he's going to be there. I think he's going significantly earlier than 29.
Yeah, I've seen him mocked in the top 10. I've obviously seen him fall to 29 like Mel Kiper had. So clearly his draft range amongst the media is all over the place. But you're saying that folks in NFL, you know, talent evaluation rooms are high on this kid because of the measurables and because of how he tested at the combine. When you watch the tape with Shamar Stewart, what do you think is his go-to trait that will translate immediately in the National Football League?
I think he's got some first step quickness. I think he uses his length when he's able to kind of lock out, when he's, you know, able to kind of create separation between himself and the tackle. That's when he's at his best. And I think he does a good job converting speed to power. He played at about 280 this past season. This is a heavy, heavy, DN type of player. So I think he's got great length. Again, when he uses it well, effectively, the long arm, I think that's when you saw him string his best reps on tape. I think he does a nice job, again, converting speed to power. It's the inconsistencies in his game. He's certainly raw from a technical standpoint. But again, teams love betting on the athletic upside. I mean, he's not the only one in this draft. There are a couple of them. You know, Mykel Williams is a guy that's got, you know, somewhat similar from a lack of production but measurements standpoint. Heck, there are a couple. Trayvon Walker a couple years ago goes, you know, number one overall. Wasn't a ton of production there either, right, at the time.
Sure.
So NFL, they tend to love these guys. I think he's going top 10, top 15.
It's going to be interesting to see, man, because the edge rushers that may be available to Washington toward this back end of the first round, there's a reason they didn't go in the top 10. We know how premium of a position the edge rusher is. So there are question marks with all of these guys, from James Pierce to, well, Mel Kiper, Justin, has Donovan Azaraku going 28 to Detroit. From folks that you talk to, because I've heard this amongst the scouting community, is the media higher on Azaraku than the NFL is? Because I keep hearing that there are varying grades on him in terms of some guys like him as a, you know, top 12 pick, others see him falling around too.
Yeah, I do think there's a pretty decent chance that the media is higher on him than the NFL. And I'm personally high on him.
Me too.
16 and a half sacks this past year. I mean, that's unfathomable, yeah. That much sack production. And keep in mind, the athleticism, he ran the fastest shuttle and the fastest three cone of any pass rusher at the NFL combine. I think the three cone was a 6.94. I mean, that's outstanding short area agility.
Yeah.
And the shuttle was a 4.25, right? Like, and you know this as well as I do. That translates.
Yes.
You know, when I'm watching a pass rusher on tape and I look at the combine numbers, I want you to have short area agility first and foremost, right?
Right.
It's more important than the 40. That's why when they run the 40, we look at the 10-yard split, right? Cause it's all about that short area explosion. So, again, the production is there. The athleticism is there. I think the question teams have is the early down. Is he going to be a run stopper? Can I play him on all three downs? Or does he find himself in a DPR role, a designated pass rusher? And if that's the case, again, you know as well as I do, that the league isn't always as high on those guys. They don't draft them highly. It's funny. I hate to do this because you never want to scout the helmet. But do you remember when Harold Landry
exactly.
was
that's
coming
out? Exactly. That's what I was going
to say.
He, yeah,
that's like Harold Landry.
Yes.
Right, because when he was coming out, it was the same questions. If you recall, he had a year there at Boston College where he had like 18 sacks.
Went Kanye like crazy, as I like to call it, Justin.
Right. Just as Azaraku did. He had
exactly.
like 18 sacks that one year at Boston College. He ends up going back. I remember speaking to this about him. He went back the following year. People asked why. He didn't have a good grade from the draft advisory board, and
yeah.
those things are typically spot on. He goes back. The production was good, not quite as good, but again, what's going to happen to him on draft weekend? He went in the second round to the Titans because the questions were the same thing. I don't,
right.
you know, and he can play on early downs.
For
we
sure.
know that now.
For sure.
He got a $90 million contract, his second deal. But at the time, is he a designated pass rush? Can he play early downs? He's a bit undersized to set the edge. Azaraku is facing the same questions right now.
So can we play a little hypothetical, Harry, with you here, Justin? I'm going to give you four names that are on the board when Washington is picking at 29. And you tell me, if you were the Commanders, who do you ultimately go with? I'm going to go with Siobhan Revel, the corner, obviously. I'm going to go with Shamar Stewart. I'm going to go with Emeka Egbuka. And I'm also going to go with Travion Henderson. Of those four names, who should Washington be turning the card in for?
For me, it's an easy answer. It would be Emeka Egbuka.
Yeah.
I think... first of all, I got a first-round grade on him. I'm a bit surprised that there is some, you know, discussion about him falling. I'll be shocked if he makes it out of the opening 32. I think there are so many teams, especially in that back half of the first round, that could be into. I mean, the Green Bay Packers, I saw some great stories linking him there, said that they're very high on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Baltimore Ravens would be in on him if they go receiver. Certainly the Commanders, maybe even the Bills and the Chiefs, you know, who I think still have incomplete receiver rooms towards the back end there. It'll be interesting to see what Washington does, because initially I thought he's exactly what they should be looking for. You know, he wins over the middle of the field. He's physical. He's got terrific yard after catch ability. I think he thrives those intermediate routes. Now, they went out and got a Deebo Samuel to do a lot of those things. But I think that's a short-term solution there with Deebo.
Just because it wouldn't prevent them from taking a receiver.
Exactly. I think that's the way they should approach it. And even, again, because and he hasn't been the healthiest guy either, Deebo, in recent years. So I think you'd love to have a guy like that. Compliment Scary Terry well. For me, if it's those four on the board, they've all got questions. You know, the corner you give me is coming off a serious season-ending injury. We talked about Shamar. Travion, you got the whole run. This is a deep running back class. Mm-hmm. I would not take a running back at 29 if I was Washington. I love what Igbuka would add to this offense. Terrific weapon for Jaden Daniels across the middle.
So you had the chance recently here to catch up with one of my favorite backs in this draft. Talking about R.J. Harvey, man, I look at him and go, brother, I mean, what do you think is the draft range for him? Because you talk about vision and explosion and the ability to turn an 8-yard run into a 50-yard run. He's got it. What do you think is that sweet spot for him?
Well, I had an outstanding conversation about something similar with the running back class in general with an NFL scout today, earlier this afternoon. And he said to me, a lot of these guys are going to be day three picks, more than you realize. And as soon as you hit that fourth round, it becomes so team specific that guys will often go two rounds later than you think they will on day three. Because if you got a fifth round grade on a guy, he might be a PFA. That's how this thing is going to shake out. So
wow.
I don't think RJ's going early. I think you're looking at probably, you know, I would say four at the earliest. I'd like to say round six at the latest. But based on that conversation with the scout, once you start falling on day three, he said it's about runs at the position. You know, you're going to see once two corners start going on day three, corners are going to fly off the board. Now, it's a talented class. But again, last year's class, I think R.J. Harvey's a third-round pick.
Yeah.
Not a great running back class last year. But this year, it's such a deep class. Don't be surprised if he's available there mid-day three.
I want to ask you a bigger picture question here when it comes to this NFL draft. One guy that I feel like I'm higher on than everybody else is in the media is Will Howard, the quarterback from Ohio State. And I always say this, Justin, I'm sure you feel the same way. All of these quarterbacks that are coming out in this draft have talent. It's not as if any of these guys don't have the goods. Quarterback success at the next level for a rookie is a lot of the times dependent upon fit. With Will Howard, if he gets into the right fit, and who knows, maybe it is the Vegas Raiders coming around and scooping him maybe in round number two if they're that high on him, or in round three. What type of guy do you think he could be? Am I too high on him where I think he's got the potential, if in the right system, to be a top 15 to 17 quarterback right away?
You know, it's funny. First of all, the analytics, the history tells us one of these quarterbacks is going to hit, right? One of these mid-round guys, whether it's him, Kyle McCord, the Louisville kid, Jalen Milroe, like one of these guys is going to hit, right? And I would not be surprised if it's him. It's so funny you asked me about him because I was brushing up on some Igbuka tape yesterday. We just talked about
it. Yes.
I was brushing up 10 o'clock. My wife couldn't drag me away from the computer. I got the Igbuka All-22 pulled up. And then there's a touchdown throw. God, I can't remember what game I was watching now. I watched a bunch of them. But there's a touchdown throw in there where I paused it. I said, man, I jotted down some notes about Will Howard. I said, the way he fit that ball into that window, the velocity, it was left corner side of the end zone. And I go, God, the corner, the safety was closing on it so quickly. And the way he just fit it in there with the velocity, you know as well as I do, that velocity, these windows close quick.
Yeah.
In the NFL, you either get it there or it's an interception, right? Like that's the two varying outcomes in the NFL when it comes to ball velocity. So I have been really impressed with him. I think it was just he was with John Gruden recently, just the other day. And John Gruden said he reminded him of Josh Allen. I know that caused a huge
easy there, John Gruden. Well, look.
Right.
Justin, feeling a little too nicey.
Yeah, caused a huge stir on social media. But I will say, of all these mid-round quarterbacks, he is the one that I'm most intrigued, most impressed by.
Yeah, his performance during their run to the college football playoff and the national championship was awesome, man. Big-time throw after big-time throw, especially that game against Oregon. Woof, came out on the heater. Justin, we're up against the clock, my brother. I appreciate you giving us some time. 15 days away from round one. We'll have several conversations before night one of the draft, my brother. I appreciate you making some time for us.
You know where to find me. Appreciate you.
That is Justin Mello. You can find him on the old X app at @JustinM_NFL. One of the absolute best talking all things NFL draft. Make sure you check out his stuff at the Draft Network as well. Turning into one of my favorite outlets, man, when it comes to NFL draft content. They do an excellent job. We've had Justin Mello on. We've had our guy Ryan Fowler on. They get down to the nitty-gritty when it comes to the NFL draft. Wow. Speaking of nitty-gritty, the NBA's gritty star can't stop pointing guns with his fingers. We'll get on Ja Morant next.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big shout out to our guy Justin Mello from the Draft Network. If you missed any of my conversation with him, you were in luck. Download the always free Odyssey app. Use the Odyssey Rewind feature and go back to the top of the 10 o'clock hour. Get the latest on the NFL draft. I'm glad I got to give some my Will Howard take out, because I know us here locally, we're not really looking at quarterbacks right now for obvious reasons, because Jaden Daniels is him. Ben, you would have got a real kick out of this. Earlier during the season, I think it was after the Bengals game, segment we did, myself and Chris Russell, is Jaden Daniels him? Of course he's him. Of course he's him. Anywho, about a half hour left to go on the show here tonight. I wanted to read a tweet out that I got. It was, see if I can actually find it. So maybe the person who tweeted at me deleted it. It was under the show post for tonight, but it's no longer there. So if you're tweeting stuff and deleting it, just be a man. Bam you. Be a man university. I'm in year two, semester three. Three semesters at Bam U, not just two. A lot more to get to before we get out of here, though. I mentioned I want to get into Ja Morant. I have really... There's so many different ways you can go with this. I am just going to take the humble approach, man, because I can relate to Ja Morant. I'm not a guy that is going to sit up here and try and crucify a dude for making a mistake, right? But if you're familiar with what's happening with Ja Morant, this has far exceeded the point of making a mistake. Because when you continue to do the same thing over and over and over and over again, and you don't even let a whole calendar year go by, you probably don't get it. And the latest antics with Ja Morant, after getting caught on camera twice with a gun, not something you want one of the faces of your league doing, I might add. After doing that, he has now, you know, been fined $75,000 by the NBA after getting warned initially, hey, do not use finger guns, right, when it comes to your celebration after you make a three-pointer, after you hit a shot. Don't do that. Why should you not do that? Well, because you're Ja Morant And you've already, like I said, been caught twice on video waving, flashing a gun. It ain't a good look. It's just not. So the NBA warned him. He was ignorant, did it again. They proceeded to fine him $75,000. I'm still waiting to see if he gets fined for his latest antics. Last night, knocks down a three and then pretends like he is throwing a grenade into the crowd. Did you see that, Ben? I don't know if you saw the grenade celebration from last night. He literally, and people were like, why do you know that he's just a grenade? You literally see him pull it up, throw it into the crowd. Then he covered his ears to, like, cover the explosion noise. He's taking his celebrations and his antics way too far, and he's going to end up costing himself a whole lot of money.
Look, I would know firsthand listening to that NBA young boy. It gets you feeling some type of way, but you got to control yourself.
Exactly. I mean, come on. This for years. Like, I used to hate it, man. And I don't know if you remember this. The last GTA that came out, and I don't know how geeked up we are about the next GTA that's about to drop because it looks as real as anything I've ever seen. Maybe the best video game ever. But GTA, what is it, 5? It's the best game ever in terms of the way it was updated, how realistic it is. They're still doing beta updates on this thing. And the game is like 10 years old damn near.
It's insane.
So remember the Supreme Court, like GTA and Rockstar got taken to the Supreme Court because there were folks out there trying to say that, well, my son is being influenced by this video game. And I strongly dislike that group of people that try and blame their shortcomings as a parent as to why their kid is out acting a damn fool. It ain't Rockstar's fault that your kid don't pay attention. And look, it isn't the NBA's fault, right, that Ja Morant's acting a fool. And if he doesn't stop acting a fool, I'll tell you what, he will be out of this league before you know it. And what's disheartening and disappointing about this is the fact that he's got three tremendous examples of who to follow in terms of how to be a face of a league. Because make no mistake about it, Adam Silver in the NBA, the grittying, the fan interaction, Ja's supposed to be for the kids, man. Ja's supposed to be for the kids. So, yes, they've given him chance after chance after chance. But he's got three great guys to look up to in his league. Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Stephen Curry, all tremendous ambassadors for the league, all guys that listen to NBA Youngboy and hip-hop music. Well, I know Steph Curry's a big Lecrae fan, but you pick up what I'm putting down, man. I don't want to hear any outside influence on Ja Morant why he's making these decisions. Ja Morant's being an idiot. They gave you the blueprint. All you do, all they have done, talk about Steph, LeBron, and KD, is go out and be the best players in the league, win at a crazy, absurd rate, and make not some of the money, not a little bit of the money, all the money. There was a point in time you couldn't cut on your television without seeing LeBron, Steph, or KD in a commercial. I think we're still at that point. They're as marketable as they come. And for whatever reason, Ja Morant will not follow that course of action. And I don't just blame Ja Morant. I blame his pappy as well. T. Morant, you look like a certified clown on the sideline, basically watching this happen is how I'm looking at it. And this is the thing when, like, you're the breadwinner of a clique. Some guys may be scared to come tell you how a T.I. is, so to speak. When you're the breadwinner of a clique, some guys may be scared to tell you exactly what you need to hear because they don't want to get their hand cut off, if you pick up what I'm putting down. T. Morant, you're the dad. You birthed his ass. There's no way you're going to watch your son sit there and act a fool night in, night out. And I feel like Ja at this point is taunting the NBA. Ja Morant at this point, in my opinion, is taunting the NBA in terms of, oh, yeah? You thought the gun celebration was bad. I can't do that? Okay. You didn't say I couldn't throw a grenade into the crowd. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. All of the young eyes that are on this sport, that celebration, and I know others have done it, but others, that's the one thing that almost jumped through the TV screen listening. I think it was Nick Wright talking about this on FS1. Well, Well, there are other guys in the NBA that do the gun celebration. Have they been caught twice on camera and suspended by the league for flashing a gun in a nightclub and in a pickup truck? No. Ja Morant, grow the hell up. That's all I got on it.
I agree. I'm not a fan of the gun celebrations at all. I've been happy that they have cracked down on them because when you look at it just from a bigger picture, this country, gun violence is such a prevalent problem. People
Huge.
Who watch sports,
especially in Memphis,
have lost their kids to gun violence. People, I mean, we live in a country where there are more mass shootings than anywhere in the world. And you still have people that imitate it because it's not a joke. It's not something that should be enlightened and taken, you know, as a way of celebrating. It's not something you should be celebrating, essentially.
So I get the other side of the coin, right? And I don't want to come down sounding like an old man. The NFL is outlawing it this year, the gun celebration, for good reason. The gun celebration, the wipe your nose celebration. Like, I get it. I get it. But, like, I'll be real. The NBA wouldn't give a damn if it was another player doing it. It's the fact that it's Ja Morant and he's already been thoroughly warned not to move this way. And he has given Adam Silver in the NBA and the NBAPA the middle finger. Point blank, period. 1-800-636-1067. From a star in a sport that can't get his act together to another star in another sport that can't get his act together. We'll give you the latest on what happened earlier this afternoon with Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill next here on The Fan. I'm scrolling down my Twitter timeline. And remember we were getting you up to speed earlier about, you know, Lucas making his return to Dallas tonight. By the way, Nico Harrison, it's going to be tough for you being a resident of Dallas, Texas, for however long you're employed there. Luka Doncic torched the Dallas Mavericks tonight. 45 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. The two guys that were traded for Luka, Anthony Davis, Max Christie, combined for 24 points. That's it. So, can you say worst trade in NBA history? For sure. For sure. But at that Mavericks game is Dirk Nowitzki, who obviously is a huge mentor to Luka Doncic. He was in L.A. when Luka made his Lakers debut. Those two have built a tremendous relationship for obvious reasons, right? The two legends of that franchise here over the past 20-plus years. For him to usher the Luka Doncic era in the way that he did, you know, says a lot about Dirk, and the way that he's been there for him is awesome. But the camera pans to Taylor Rooks and Dirk Nowitzki in a suite at the game, and Taylor Rooks makes a gun sign with her fingers and is kind of like pretend shooting Dirk Nowitzki. And what does Dirk do? Pulls the lid off of a fake grenade and throws it. I wonder what they were talking about. That idiot, Ja Morant. So the fact that that's what they got caught on camera doing is absolutely crazy. And if you're Ja, like, how many more messages do you need? How many more signs do you need? Grow the hell up, son. Same way I feel about Ja. Same way I feel about Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill I get even more upset with. Because he's a bluffer. He is a bluffer. All of the hubbub, doing the whole bit of like, yeah, I'm requesting a trade at the end of the season, and then you don't actually request a trade. Tyreek Hill is a big-ass baby. And I guess that's an oxymoron because he's technically little. But the way he acts, and I'm not even talking about the complaining about his standing in Miami. What I'm more frustrated with is it become like an off-season routine for him and his girl or his fiance, wife, I think is what she's technically is, they're married, for them to get into it. Earlier today, police get called to Tyreek Hill's house for a domestic violence dispute. And y'all know I would never come up here and make any sort of light towards domestic violence. It's sad. It's a tough situation. And people get trapped and stuck in those situations. So I want to tread lightly here when speaking about this. But come on, man. There are so many better coping mechanisms that that Tyreek Hill can use other than getting into major spats with his significant other to where the police are called. Walk away. And that's my message to anybody out there listening. Young, old, you have the power to walk away in every situation, whether it's gun violence, whether it's domestic violence, you have the opportunity to walk away. And I wish, for the sake of his career, for the sake of the Dolphins, I really care less about the Dolphins, but for Tyreek, like, he seems like a good guy. Stop being a knucklehead. Walk away. It's frustrating because this is an every offseason bit now with him. It's every year. And at some point, don't you get tired of being the center of attention for the wrong reason? It's not like he played worth a damn this year. Did Tyreek Hill even crack 1,000 yards receiving? Don't even think so. So, he's got to be better, man. He's got to be better. I don't know if you remember this, Ben. I was like, did he even have 1,000 yards? Do you remember Sunday Night Football after the then Redskins beat the Raiders and Josh Norman was perping in the locker room on Michael Crabtree? Did he even have one yard? Did he even get 10 yards? It reminded me of that. I love me some Josh Norman. And I know people, that's probably an unsexy take around here because he didn't have the ball production or production period that he was supposed to have here. But you want to talk about a stand-up guy and just a great human being, Josh Norman for president. Love me some J-No. Love me some J-No. 1-800-636-1067. For all you Commander fans out there, you want to trade for Tyreek Hill now? You want that mess in your locker room? Because he's a mess. 100%. 100%. I'll be honest with you. If the Dolphins came calling, I'd still pick up the phone. If the Dolphins came calling right now about Tyreek Hill, I got to pick up the phone. He's too talented. He's too talented. But damn, man, I guess this goes big picture about what we're building here in Washington. And this serves to be true when it comes to the draft as well. Like, I'm kind of out on Mike Green from Marshall, James Pierce out of Tennessee, because when there are character flaws and character concerns attached to a prospect, especially here in this organization, knowing what they've been through in the past, I think it's hard to let that into your building. I think the other thing is this, the flip side of that coin, is that Washington has such a veteran-led locker room and has such a tight-knit unit that maybe they are able to inherit some bad apples and get them on the straight and narrow. Their locker room allows them to do that. Their coaching staff allows them to do that. It's going to be fascinating. I would pick up the phone, though, if they called about Tyreek Hill. One final segment to go here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. When we come back, we'll wrap things up talking a little bit of NBA. We'll let you hear from Wizards rookie Bub Carrington, who spoke postgame about what this rebuild means to him. We'll let you hear from Bub next here on The Fan. One final segment to go here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. Tapped in to the youngest in Charles Linnell Willingham. You know, it's crazy. I turned my head to the left, and it's 7-0 Sixers with 7:16 left to go in the opening quarter. And I thought, damn, didn't they already play? Monumental re-racking the game already? Is that how they're moving? Your boy would have loved this back in the day in the era of Comcast Sportsnet. Whenever I would miss a game, it felt like, damn, they would never replay it. I used to have to go on demand and rewatch Wizard games. That's how you know how much of a sicko I was. And I was going and watching bad Wizard games from back in the day. Ben Strober, you're young, but you're younger than me. So, like, certain things probably don't resonate with you. I tell the story all the time about how I became such a diehard Wizards fan. It was honestly a ploy to be able to stay up longer at night. This was during the year before they drafted John Wall. I asked my uncle one night, they were on the West Coast playing the Kings, who were also just as bad. I was like, can I stay up and watch the Wizards game? He was just so excited that I wanted to watch the Wizard game that he let me watch a 10 o'clock start time Wizard game. And think about what time that's ending at. So I'm in middle school while this is happening. So I'm not going to bed probably till like 1 o'clock, but I end up falling asleep. I have a terrible habit of falling asleep any and everywhere, including behind the wheel. It's terrible. Joking when I say that, but not really. But you have no clue if I reference Darius Sengaila and Dominic McGuire and Andre Blatch.
I know Blatch.
I'm sure that name resonates with you. Nick Young.
Oh, the Swaggy P?
Swaggy P, yeah.
How could anybody forget about him?
Swaggy P in a Wizards uniform was not appreciated.
I love that clip of him just throwing the layup over the backboard. It's one of the best all-time layup misses of all time. Other than Brandon Knight smoking the game winner.
He was a bucket, though, bro. Like, Nick Young here, bro, he dropped 40.
He's before I was a religious watcher. Man. I became a religious watcher, honestly, in 2014 when I started to see that they had gotten good under this, you know, regime, I guess, with Wall and Beal. I watched them a little bit throughout first, second, third grade, but they were pretty terrible in those years. That was just when Wall had gotten into the league. And then I really got into it for about 5 years when this team actually had a realistic window of making a run at the finals.
Yeah, I remember the John Wall, Brad Beal era, man, was so short-lived. My favorite moment, I would say, I remember their first game back in the playoffs where they're playing Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler.
That series, man, was awesome.
Nene was played like
remember
such
he got
a
suspended,
dog.
Yes. Too? I was at the game where he fought Butler.
Okay, bet, yes.
And Dunleavy had 35 points.
Mike, now the GM of
Bulls
the,
fans next to us. I was sitting in the last row of Capital One, Verizon Center back then.
Yeah, that time, yeah.
That's how long ago it was. And these drunk Bulls fans are up there every time Dunleavy hits it. Dunleavy, leave them open.
Oh, God.
It was the worst. The Wizards, that was the only game they lost that series. Of course, I was there.
How head ass of a chant is that? Dunleavy
them open.
Dunleavy them open.
I doubt my dad's listening, but he'd probably he'd start to tweak out if he heard that right now.
I want to let you hear, speaking of the Wizards, they fell earlier tonight to Philadelphia at home. It was their home finale. Our guy Alex Flum of DC News Now on the question asks this of Wizards rookie Bub Carrington.
Bub, I got a follow-up for DA's question when he was asking you about what the team will look like when you're winning. When you hear a question like that and you think about those days that are going to come eventually, hopefully for you guys, how does that make you feel to think about, you know, this rebuild and what you guys are building coming to a fruition one day and you guys being the ones leading this team to wins?
It makes me feel good. It makes me feel like when I'm, like, you know, 38, and then doing podcasts and stuff, the NBA, like, I have, like, great stories to tell. Like, man, I started out losing. I started out, you know, I got 8 championships. Like, you know, like, it makes me feel good just to know that we got a journey ahead of us. And, like, all of us are super excited to, like, attack that journey. Like, we know where we're at, obviously, but we also know what we're capable of. Like we said, like, it just makes me excited, you know. I'm anxious.
If that answer doesn't scream I'm from Baltimore, then I don't know what does. 8 championships, Bubster? Get real, brother. Kidding, obviously. He has turned into probably my favorite Wizard on the scene. I'm a huge Jordan Poole fan. So I think Jordan Poole owns that right of being my favorite Wizard on this team. But in terms of my second favorite Wizard, it's Bub Carrington. And him and Keyshawn George, Alex is more of a reserved, talking about Alex Saar, a reserved, quiet guy. But, man, when I'm watching Keyshawn George and Bub Carrington in the middle of veteran-led scraps, it gained so much respect for me because, and I kind of expected it from Bub, man, knowing what he went through on the AAU circuit, knowing where he went to high school, knowing where he grew up playing pickup basketball, it's in his blood. And I know we give Baltimore crap all the time. It's not a part of the DMV. I still feel that way. They're tough as nails, and he's tough as nails. I really do have an appreciation for what he was able to accomplish this year, and the Wizards sent out the press release while the game was happening. Bub named the recipient of the annual Washington Wizards Dr. E.B. Henderson Team Award, and that award, you know, was introduced during 2021. It recognizes a Wizard player for exceptional contributions and work in the community. And, you know, Bub has been very instrumental in the DMV area during his rookie campaign, you know, going out in helping the community in whatever way that he can. I think it's awesome. It's a big reason why I love John Wall so much. John Wall and the impact he made in this community, the John Wall, the turkey drive he did, the backpack giveaway, like things of that nature. For a guy that wasn't from here to come here and embrace this town the way that he did, you'll never get me to say anything bad about John Wall, the person. Same thing about Bradley Beal, the person, right? He may be a bank robber getting Ted Leonsis to give him that no trade clause. He must have slipped something in Ted's drink. But what he did in this community cannot be overstated, man. Refurbishing the courts at Benjamin Banneker, like just being a stand-up individual, a stand-up human being, you love that. And for Bub to already win this, to win this as a rookie, like it says a lot about who he is as a person. Obviously, we know the mental fortitude that he has overcoming the passing of his father a little over a month ago, man, and being able to deal with that and be able to still compete at the highest level and, you know, being able to stay locked in. I would have to believe, and this is just me, I guess I can speak to it, you know, that distraction, so to speak, of work and being around your teammates can really ease the emotional toll and emotional burden of losing a parent or losing a family member, man. So shout out to Bub Character. Shout out the Wizards, man. Final home game of the season was tonight. Can't wait for locker cleanout day for these guys because I am surely excited to hear about, you know, what Will Dawkins and Mike Winger and Coach Keefe, what they think are the next steps when it comes to this Wizards rebuild. That's going to do it, though, here for this Wednesday night edition of OT. Big thank you to our producer, Ben Strober. Big thank you to Justin Mello of the Draft Network. Big thank you to Bobby Blanco of MassinSports.com as well. See you next time.